Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, the clown show continues. Nadler and Schiff strutted into the Senate. Going to take charge, kick ass, and take names. And they were told to shut up and sit down. They were no longer in charge. You know, our system is built around the concept of innocent till proven guilty. The procedure put into place by the House is you're guilty till you can prove you're innocent. Totally contrary to the tenets of American jurisprudence. So we'll see how it rolls out. It kind of got started yesterday. Now, I had an interesting email asking me what I knew about Nibiru. Now, I've done a show or two on Nibiru. That's the 12th planet identified by Zachariah Sitchin that comes through our solar system every 3,600 years. And many ancient cultures have written about it. And the existence of a large body of some kind that most folks do refer to as Planet X or Nibiru can account for the orbital irregularities of Neptune and Uranus that have been the subject of research for over 100 years. Now, the discovery of Pluto in 1930 actually occurred while astronomers were looking for this mysterious Planet X. But it was soon realized Pluto was just too small to account for the observed deviations. And with, of course, the changing political realities, everything these days is politics. There's no longer a fully credible information source regarding what Planet X actually is, where it is now, or where it might be at any future time. Of course, speculation, false assumptions, disinformation are rampant, but they're always with us. Now, NASA was actively looking for Planet X up into the mid-80s, but now it officially denies Planet X even exists. They've gone completely silent on the idea. And many believe it's because Planet X might pose a danger to the Earth at some point in its orbit. But before it ceased to discuss it, the agency did provide a number of interesting details that can be used to piece together an approximate arrival time using that data with a classical textbook orbital physics. Now, one of the earliest articles describing NASA's search for Planet X appeared in the November 1982 issue of Science Digest, written by Dr. J. Allen Hynek, professor emeritus of astronomy at Northwestern University. He was also hired by the Air Force as a consultant regarding UFOs. Now, the article stated that the orbital anomalies of Neptune and Uranus could be caused by either a planetary object 4 to 7 billion miles away, or a much larger object such as a brown dwarf at a distance of about 50 billion miles. Hynek said NASA believed that data coming from the Pioneer 10 and 11 space probes, which were launched in 72 and 73, would allow scientists at NASA's research site in Pasadena in the Jet Propulsion Laboratory to determine which of the two was causing the orbital anomalies. He also said a telescope on board the satellite called IRAS would soon provide additional search capabilities. That's the infrared astronomy satellite. Now, a diagram in that article depicts the solar system of both celestial objects and two space probes. Pioneer 10 shown as heading nominally in the presumed direction of the two objects, and Pioneer 11 actually heading in the opposite direction. Now, the New York Times published an article January 30th, 1983, entitled Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. It was written by John Noble Wilford. And in that article, he quoted John Anderson, at the time a senior research scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, as having said, a brown dwarf in a neighborhood might not reflect enough light to be seen far away. But the most significant part of the article was a later statement. Its gravitational forces, however, could produce energy detectable by the infrared astronomical satellite. Anderson said he was quite optimistic that the telescope might find it and the Pioneer spacecraft could supply an estimate of the object's mass. And in fact, that's exactly what NASA seemed to have had in mind. The first official indication from NASA that a large distant celestial body might well exist beyond the orbit of Pluto appeared in the Washington Post in December of 1983. And it was based on observations in January of that year by the infrared satellite. The article said a heavenly body, possibly as large as Jupiter and possibly as close to Earth that it could be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite. This mystery body was seen twice by the infrared satellite as it scanned the northern sky from January to November of 83, when the satellite ran out of the super cold helium that allowed its telescope to see the coldest bodies in the heavens. The second observation took place 6 months after the first, suggested that mystery body hadn't moved from its spot in the sky near the western edge of the constellation Orion in that time. And further into the article, it states the most fascinating explanation of this mystery body, which is so cold it casts no light and has never been seen by optical telescopes on Earth or in space, and that it's a giant gaseous planet as large as Jupiter and as close to the Earth as 50 trillion miles. Now, the Post later corrected that article. That 50 trillion mile figure was changed to 50 billion miles, which is about 538 AU. The object was later declared to be a red dwarf and given the name M6V11825. And yet, shortly after, it was mysteriously deleted from the official astronomical record without any explanation or discussion. Now, you have to ask yourself, why would a space agency who has found something unusual like that in space delete it from its catalog? In late 86, the latest edition of New Illustrated Science and Invention Encyclopedia came out with a discussion about the NASA Pioneer probes. It also contained information about Planet X. On page 2488, a pictorial diagram shows the distance of the dead star that may form the binary companion of our own sun, and indicated on the diagram it was 50 billion miles from Earth. Presumably, it's the same object twice observed by the infrared astronomical satellite. In fact, the diagram appears to be the very same one that appeared in the Science Digest article written by Dr. Hynek in 1982. But there is one small change. Text beside the object labeled it as the 10th planet and indicates a distance of 4.7 miles from Earth, which may have been an inadvertent distortion of the source diagram, which showed a possible 10th planet at 4.7 billion miles from Earth. Now, there's no information available regarding who made the estimates, how or in what time frame is provided in the text. But the source is obviously NASA's disclosures from 1982 and possibly 83 as well. Although the diagram clearly shows two objects, one at 50 billion miles away and another mentioned explicitly referred to as Planet X at 4.7 billion miles, this may have been no more than a repeat of the original diagram's implied conjecture from the Science Digest article of two possibilities for the disturbing planet. In June of 88, journalist Wilford published another article in the New York Times about the Pioneer missions, which discussed a search for Planet X specifically. The article revealed additional information regarding NASA's plans to use both Pioneer missions to detect the presence of this mysterious Planet X. Jet Propulsion Laboratory's John Anderson again served as a spokesman for that search and said the two craft were equipped to detect any gravitational anomalies that might be caused by the mysterious Planet X, but none had been detected. Anderson said the Pioneer 10 was about 45 AU away from the sun at the time, traveling at about 28,400 miles an hour, and in the article's words, over the last 5 years, scientists have also followed Pioneer's extended mission for looking for evidence of a 10th planet and for gravity waves such as those theorized by Einstein. The spacecraft is making the search in conjunction with its twin, Pioneer 11, which is journeying in another direction toward the edge of the solar system. In the late 80s, NASA published the first results of a massive study effort led by senior scientist Dr. Robert Harrington, who dedicated a substantial portion of his last years pursuing the whereabouts of the mysterious Planet X. The paper was entitled The Location of Planet X and was published in 1988. In that study, Harrington, who was supervisory astronomer for the Naval Observatory at the time, claimed to believe in the existence of this planet, having 3 to 7 Earth masses that could account for the orbital perturbations of Neptune and Uranus. But it was clear from the article he didn't believe its orbit or location had been pinned down at that time, nor did he mention anything about a much larger object such as a brown dwarf being the possible cause. Now, the main results of his massive computer simulation involving over 170,000 computer runs was based on the results, a good working model for the planet was determined to be one in a high elliptical orbit at an angle of about 30 degrees from the ecliptic over a long period of over 1,000 years. And that the major portion of the orbit was in the southern skies in the constellation Libra. And right up until his death in 1993, he was committed to carrying out that search. But if Planet X or a brown dwarf had been observed in 83, as stated in the Washington Post article, why was Harrington spending so much time trying to determine its location in its orbit? Well, one issue is that the infrared astronomical satellite had made two observations of an object separated in time, which is plenty for estimating its distance away using spectroscopy and redshift analysis, but not enough to determine its orbit. He wanted more information. For that, at least three observations are needed. That object was most likely not the elusive Planet X anyway, if its distance was actually 50 billion miles away. Simply put, whatever it was they'd observed in 83, whether Planet X or a brown dwarf, they still didn't know where it was coming or where it was going. And later indications were that there may well be a Planet X much closer and apparently a different object altogether than the one described in the article of 1983. September 28, 1999, the BBC News Online posted an article about NASA's Pioneer probe titled Old Spacecraft Makes Surprise Discovery. It was written by David Whitehouse. The story described news about Pioneer 10 launched by NASA in 72 towards Jupiter and beyond the solar system and its apparent encounter in deep space with an object well beyond the orbit of Neptune, which the article stated had occurred in December of 92. The article cited researchers involved in the discovery as scientists from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in NASA and an Italian scientist named Dr. Giacomo Giampieri from Westfield College in London. According to an interview Dr. Giampieri made with the press, he said, "We're quite excited. We found one of these events. It's a very neat signal." And in that same article, it was said that on December 8, 1992, when Pioneer was 8.4 billion kilometers, about 5.2 billion miles away, they saw what it had been deflected from its course for about 25 days. The scientists have been looking for such an effect for years and are currently analyzing the data using different methods to confirm their findings. The probe's distance away then corresponded to 56 AU, which implies that since Pioneer 10 had detected nothing prior to that point, that whatever was causing the anomaly at that time was further away. This implies that if the cause had been Planet X, then the distance of Pioneer 10 at that time could be used as a lower bound for the planet's distance away at later times as well. And earlier in 92, before Harrington passed away, NASA made a related press release that almost certainly originated with Harrington. Now, he was apparently quite influential in his determinations. There's no question that he was fully involved in the search for the mysterious Planet X. He said, "Unexplained deviations in the orbits of Uranus and Neptune point to a large outer solar system body of 4 to 8 Earth miles to the billion miles from Sun. That's probably the most explicit statement about Planet X's distance from the Sun NASA has ever made publicly." So the science community believed that knew approximately how distant Planet X was at least 2 points in time. "5.2 or as much as 7 billion miles away in 92, according to NASA, and presuming that number is credible. 4.7 billion miles away in 1987, that according to a U.S. British Science Encyclopedia with an unidentified source, is most likely NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory's observations. Now, this number may actually derive from 1983 IRAS satellite imagery, which it almost had to be since there's been no other similar observations reported in that time frame. If the data actually came from IRAS, the closer number is being of greater concern. The first number at 5.2 billion miles is clearly 56 AU, and the 4.7 billion miles seem to correspond to 50.5 AU. Then there became an argument over exactly what miles were being used. Nautical miles, land miles, aerial miles. Interestingly, if Planet X was coming toward us from a distance of 58 AU in 1983 with a period of 1,000 years or more, its orbital velocity at that point would be in the range of 5 kilometers per second, which means that planet would be about 9.8 AU closer to us after the elapse of the 9-year interval from 83 to 92 that equates to about a distance of 50.4 AU in 1990 and 48.2 AU in 1992. You know, Pioneer had just encountered this disturbance in late 92, which means that if that was the cause, then Planet X should have been even further away at that time. And in fact, NASA's press release from 92 stated the planet was quite a bit further out at that point in time. In fact, more than 7 billion miles away from the sun in total, which corresponds to 75 AU. That would imply that the Pioneer anomaly was experienced when Pioneer was about 19 AU from Planet X. Now, that's quite a distance and a bit difficult to accept, but on the other hand, the gravitational deviation experience was also extremely small. So it raises a number of interesting points. You know, the numbers may seem somewhat random, but there are a couple of key trends that they show in addition to the specific transition times. Long period orbits with small perihelia have very common characteristics. Now, notice it takes about 31 years for an orbiting object to go from the outermost range of Pluto's orbit at 50 AU to Jupiter's orbit at 5 AU, and only a year more if we reduce that period by a factor of 3. And this is largely due to the fact that the orbital velocity of the planet 50 AU away from the sun varies, hardly changes at all when we discuss the other orbital parameters. To know approximately where Nibiru will be soon, and at specific future times, we need to use the same equations, but in reverse. If we assume X would be 50 AU in 1990, basically because astronomer Harrington hadn't pinned down its location by then, by his own admission, and surely he would have found it if it had been several times bigger than the Earth inside Pluto's orbit. Now, this is not a likely scenario, but it pretty well sets a near-term bound in time for the planet's arrival, assuming, of course, the assumptions are valid. And in 1988, Pioneer 10 at 45 AU in the southern skies had detected no presence of a large gravitating object in its long journey. So with virtual certainty, we can say in 1988 it was further out than 45 AU. In the second case, we assume Planet X was at 56 AU in 92, corresponding to approximately where Pioneer 10 probe was when it first began to experience its gravitational anomaly. Now, the planet was almost certainly further out, but again, this case set a near-term bound, which is based on a specific NASA announcement. Keep in mind, while NASA should, in fact, be making us aware of a danger, if, in fact, this planet represents a danger, they've done everything possible to suppress the information. The last case is based on NASA's press release in 1992 stating indications at the time are pointing to an object beyond 7 billion miles from the sun, which is about 75 AU. Pioneer would have been about 19 AU away from it, and so the gravitational tug would have been extremely small, and according to NASA, it certainly was. If we know how far away Planet X was from the sun at some point, some known point in time in the past, we can use Kepler's laws to provide a rough approximation of where it is now and at any future point in its orbit. Interestingly, we don't even have to know the mass or speed of the planet to do the calculations. Orbits follow very strict rules. The analysis doesn't take into account the motions of the other planets or other perturbing influences, and so the predictions are therefore only approximate, but it does give an idea of expected transit times over long time intervals. The general solution to this two-body problem is provided in the standard text Fundamentals of Astrodynamics by Bate, Mueller, and White. A detailed sample problem was worked so that anyone who wants to can generate any other desired cases. From Kepler's third law, we know that the period T of an elliptical orbit of a small object around a much larger one satisfies the relationship T2 equals GM4P2A3. T is the orbital period of the orbiting body. M is the mass of the larger body. G is Newton's gravitational constant, and A is a semi-major axis to the orbiting eclipse. If it's expressed in astronomical units, AUs, and T is in years, then the constants can be suppressed, and we simply have T2 equals A3. For an orbital period of T equals 3,600 years, is Nibiru is supposed to have, the semi-major axis is A equals 3,600 square, equals 234.892 AU, or about 235 astronomical units. Or one astronomical unit equals 149,600,000 kilometers. Well, part of the problem has always been a determination that, in fact, Nibiru actually exists. Now, the Sumerians swore by it, and the Sumerian tablets make it very clear that it had a 3,600-year orbit, and every time it comes through the solar system, there's massive disruptions. In fact, in Turkey, there's an underground city large enough to hold 200,000 people. And that does raise interesting questions, because to build something like that took a very sophisticated engineering system that early man wasn't supposed to have. Now, if Planet X comes into the solar system as it's supposed to, there'd be major havoc on the inner planets. And according to the mathematics, the earliest time it would come into the inner system would be 2020, this year. Presuming that NASA's distant estimates applied to 1990 at the very earliest, perihelion at 3.2 astronomical units is then reached 3 years later in 2023. Notice that the time to get to perihelion and past Jupiter is very insensitive to the length of the orbit, as long as it's fairly large. And even when we shorten perihelion to 2 astronomical units, the time to reach Jupiter is only reduced by about a year. And if Planet X was at least 56 astronomical units from the Sun in 1992, as evidence seems to indicate, because it was at this point where Pioneer 10 began experiencing its course deviation, then that planet would arrive at Jupiter no sooner than about 35.5 years later, in the year 2027. Now, notice this is somewhat on the sooner than expected side, since Pioneer 10 experienced no gravitational tugs on the way out that indicated that Planet X was still further away at the time. But ask yourself this. There was something out there. What if it was Planet X? The Sumerians, the tablets that Zachariah Sitchin translated went into great detail about Planet X and the Anunnaki, and the fact they came from there to Earth to mine for gold. Now, one of the possibly useful pieces of data was provided by a writer named Marshall Masters, who's long studied and written about Planet X. He did a video in 2013 entitled Planet X 101 Series Part 1, Who, What, When, Where, Why, and How. Now, he claimed to have been given some bootleg data and photos from an anonymous source with the web name Nibiru Shock 2012, who'd gotten it from an insider at the South Pole Telescope Observatory in Antarctica. And using this information, he made the assertion that in March of 2008, Nibiru was in the Kuiper Belt, well beyond the orbit of Pluto. Even if we assume Nibiru was right at the boundary of Pluto's outer orbit at 50 astronomical units at that time, knowing that to get to Jupiter from 50 astronomical units away is a 30-year journey, this indicates Nibiru will arrive at Jupiter in 2038 at the earliest, assuming his information was valid. Well, an interesting connection with Master's data is that NASA's announcement in 1992 that Planet X was at that time was greater than 7 billion miles away. At normal orbital speed, this would equate to about 59 astronomical units away in 2008. The arrival of Nibiru at Jupiter, where Earth's problems began in dire earnest, using all the available data, would be estimated between 2029 and 2048. But as it gets closer, problems begin to develop. Now, I was also given, my show has been on several different platforms. And I was, at one point in time, I used to have a lot of psychics on my show. And there's a, according to some of the information that came from some of the psychics, it could be as, Nibiru could come as late as 2034. Sylvia Brown, in her 2008 End of the World book, said that she saw the Earth's atmosphere and geophysical conditions beginning to degrade in 2018 and to worsen considerably in the 2020s, with monsoon rains on the eastern seaboard of North and South America and widespread tidal waves in the 2025 to 2030 timeframe. She also said a pole shift would come by, but she never mentioned Planet X. Now, it's interesting to note, a lot of people swore by Sylvia Brown. When I did an event in New York City, she was there. And people wound, lined up to pay her for readings. And the line was probably half to three quarters of a mile long of people just standing and patiently waiting to get a reading from Sylvia Brown. Now, Zachariah Sitchin has stated that Planet X flies through space in a highly elliptical orbit, approaching Earth from the south on an angular plane and slingshooting around the backside of the sun before exiting back out of our solar system. And this happens every 3,600 years. It's also been said you can see the brown dwarf star approaching low on the horizon from a vantage point on the Earth's south hemisphare. And we know it's there in the glare next to the sun, hidden from view, but you know, the orbit of Planet X is a sling orbit. It's an odd orbit. It's because Nibiru has two foci, if you will. Our sun and its dead binary twin, which are 68.7 trillion miles from each other. I never knew until recently Earth has a twin. This is a binary system, even though that was never taught in school. And this creates a slinging between two heavenly objects, not the round elliptical orbit shape characteristic of a single foci orbit that we're accustomed to. And this type of orbit makes our sun and solar system just a pass-through point within the orbit circuit, which means that Planet X is bound to pass by Earth since its orbital path extends beyond our solar system. And once outbound, Planet X will continue moving away from us for several years and do a turnaround for its outbound portion of its sling orbit to the binary twin. This return part of the cycle takes it through our solar system on the far side of the sun. The position of Planet X doesn't appear to be close enough to halt Earth in orbit, but according to ancient legend, it has. According to the story, Planet X entered the solar system from the direction of Orion at an angle of 32 degrees from solar system south sometime late 2002, and then migrated rather quickly, somewhat under, but to the right of the sun to pop up like a jack-in-the-box to the elliptic on the Earth's orbit. And as crazy as that sounds, we actually stopped in orbit. Now, we hardly knew it, but we'll be stopped again, and it'd be much less of a problem for Earth. There'll be no second pole shift, according to a lot of theories, just some worldwide earthquakes at the time. Now, since Planet X is slang orbiting our sun, it passes through our solar system relatively close to the sun. Now, many millennia ago, this wasn't the case. The Planet X passage area was at the asteroid belt. It used to be populated with a few planets, but they were broken down into the asteroids that are there now. When Planet X entered our solar system in 2002, it was temporarily visible, far from the sun, but it was only for a few months as it quickly traversed the solar system where it met the sun's gravity repulsion force, which slowed its progress down. And then it partially circumnavigated the sun to the elliptic, where it is now, situated between the Earth and the sun. Also consider Earth has stopped in orbit due to diverted particle flows passing around Planet X, capturing Earth in what's called a particle flow cup. Now, it's interesting to note, over the last few years, countless people, including scientists, top scholars, universities, in conjunction with other peer-reviewed studies, have documented the fact that the moon, sun, and Earth are not in their proper positions as things may seemingly be unwinding in our solar system. There's been a change in the weather, in the seasons, in the tides, in volcanic activity, tectonic activity, and there are more tornadoes striking, and they're now striking as early as June. Now, for years, government's been aware of an approaching celestial body and its 3,600-year cycle of devastation as outlined in the ancient Sumerian text. A Washington Post article dated December 30th, 1983, said a heavenly body possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, possibly so close to Earth, it'd be part of this solar system, been found in the direction of the constellation Orion. So mysterious is the object, astronomers don't know if it's a planet, a giant comet, a protostar that never got hot enough to become a star, a distant galaxy so young it's still in the process of forming its first stars, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by the stars ever gets through it. According to Dr. Jerry Neugebauer, chief scientist for California's Jet Propulsion Laboratory for the the IRAS program, and director of the Palomar Observatory for the California Institute of Technology, said, all I can tell you is we don't know what it is, which should give you a lot of confidence. And then in 2011, secretive encoded military drills were run in preparation for what's coming. In fact, the ELENIN drill involved testing a massive worldwide network that would connect and go live in real time in the event of a major worldly disaster. And agencies such as NASA have already prepped their own and off-world personnel for such an event. Not to mention, it's already been documented by astronomers that the orbital patterns and tilt of the moon have changed, which signifies, many believe, the presence of a hidden celestial object. An excerpt from the peer-reviewed paper by Lorenzo Lorio, filed with the Cornell University Library, says, a recent analysis of a lunar laser ranging data record spanning 38.7 years revealed an anomalous increase of the eccentricity of the lunar orbit. It's interesting that a Cornell University astronomer admitted that that they themselves now looking into the possibility of Planet X type scenarios being real, and that they don't know what to do about the data. So is it possible NASA, the so-called civilian space agency, is hiding something? And what about all the newly discovered planets in our solar system that have been quietly announced? One headline was a dwarf planet near asteroid belt may contain more fresh water than Earth and even some life. And while Ceres, as it's called, may not be Planet X, per se, it lets us as humans know there's a lot more going on out there than we don't really know about. And the new find may contain life. Touted as the only dwarf planet in the solar system, Ceres, which is made up about one-third the mass of the asteroid belt itself, was been shown by a European Space Agency research team to harbor vast supplies of fresh water. Supposedly, Earth was the main body of fresh water in the solar system, and now it's starting to change. While it's currently not yet known how the water is distributed onto or inside the planet, some speculate ice volcanoes could be the source. The NASA spacecraft Dawn arrived at Ceres earlier to gather more information pertaining to the water and life on that tiny planet's surface. Carol Raymond, deputy principal investigator for Dawn at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, said, "We don't have to wait long before getting more context on this intriguing result right from the source itself. They're going to map the geology and chemistry of the surface in high resolution." Of course, they may never reveal it to the peons who pay for the program, but they're doing a lot of research. Now, Dawn, which launched in 2007, had previously orbited the protoplanet Vesta, the second largest object in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, that's littered with rock. Left over from the formation of the solar system 4.6 billion years ago. This discovery puts Ceres in a special class of solar system objects with active water plumes, which is a key ingredient of life and includes Jupiter's moon Europa, which may have an ocean beneath thick surface ice, and Saturn's moon Enceladus, where water jets have been spotted on the surface. So ask yourself this, why would NASA spend so much money, time, and effort to visit such a world? Did they already suspect the possibility that Ceres houses water and possibly life? And frankly, Ceres was named after a goddess of agriculture, grain crops, fertility, and mother-daughter relationships, which some say may be a clue that they did know. Rest assured that key factions of the U.S. government and NASA alike already knew the water and possibly life existed on Ceres, prompting the NASA mission in the first place. And if NASA's public information on Ceres is limited, their info on Planet X would absolutely remain top secret. Now remember, NASA is actually part of the Department of Defense, and anything that would tend to support the concept that there's others in the universe besides us is automatically classified. Now, astronomers may have inadvertently revived the Planet X Nibiru cataclysm conspiracy theory that dominated the internet a few years ago. Following the latest announcement by scientists of evidence that at least two planets larger than Earth lurking in our solar system beyond Pluto, Planet X cataclysm believers have been saying governments are finally preparing to disclose the truth about Nibiru to the masses as doomsday gets closer. Scientists announced in a new study published in the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society Letters that at least two planets, likely bigger than Earth, are lurking undetected in the outer fringes of the solar system beyond the orbits of Neptune and Pluto. According to Professor Carlos de la Fuente Marcos from the Complutense University of Madrid, who led the study, the evidence supporting the conclusion comes from observations of a belt of space rocks known as the extreme transneptunian objects orbiting the sun out beyond Neptune. These space rocks were found to show unexpected orbital characteristics. They could only be explained by assuming their expected paths are being distorted by some massive but unseen astronomical body nearby. Well, by analyzing time-lapse photography using the blink comparison technique originated by Pluto discoverer Clyde Tombaugh, Dr. Harrington proved that Planet X was indeed inbound to our solar system. Now, he died in 1993, but he sent back reports of his discovery. And now he died of what was supposed to be esophageal cancer before he could pack up his telescope and come home to hold what would have been a highly publicized press conference. There are those that don't think it was a natural death. I don't have enough information to decide one way or the other. Chuck Schumacher, who took photos in the Nibiru Companion of Hale Bopp and appeared on the old Art Bell Show, died of the same sudden onset cancer that took out Dr. Harrington. Hale Bopp, like Nibiru, follows an elliptical orbit. Schumacher was a NASA planetary geologist studying ancient asteroid impacts in Australia. And he was a prolific discoverer of comets. Now, Schumacher had access to Southern Hemisphere data, just like Harrington. And he could see the vast comet Hale-Bopp, knew as NASA did at the time of the original discovery of Hale-Bopp, which must have been the same time that Harrington was viewing Planet X and Hale-Bopp, which at that time was on a near-direct collision course with Earth. It later fell behind schedule due to tail drag and missed us by nearly 3 months. But at that point, there's evidence Schumacher knew this was going to go public. And like Harrington, he was well known and had the support of many other scientists. There was no autopsy, it's interesting to note, and there's no information available on his death. NASA blasted his ashes into outer space as a tribute. But it does raise, you know, questions. Now, it's interesting to note that Harrington's death happened shortly after he went public with the information about possibly sighting Planet X. Many feel his death is part of a cover-up, one in which government agencies quickly moved to conceal the most earth-shaking discovery in history. And if this is the case, the search for the truth begins in New Zealand. In 1991, he took a little 8-inch telescope to Black Birch, New Zealand, one of the few viewing points on Earth optimal for sighting Planet X, which he definitively calculated to be approaching from below the ecliptic at an angle of about 40 degrees. Harrington said the most remarkable feature predicted for Planet X is that its orbit's tilted 40 degrees away from the ecliptic. By analyzing time-lapse photography using the blink comparison technique originated by Clyde Tombaugh, as I said, the man who discovered Pluto, Harrington proved that Planet X was indeed inbound into our solar system. And he sent back reports documenting this, but died of a sudden onset of esophageal cancer. He began his search 2 years before his death. Harrington died shortly after discussing Zachariah Sitchin's work translating the Sumerian tablets. And he gave Sitchin an interview. And the question becomes, would publicity of Harrington's discovery pose a threat to the social, political, and economic stability of the world? Well, anything that points to the possibility of the destruction of society as we know it would certainly pose a threat to the social, political, and economic stability of the world. It does seem unlikely a man would contract cancer and die within a matter of days, suffering the sudden impact of pain and debilitation characteristic of rapid onset cancer, while miraculously traveling on a physically demanding expedition performing intensive astronomical operations. And esophageal cancer normally doesn't kill that rapidly. And in publishing Dr. Harrington's obituary, the U.S. Naval Observatory went out of its way to lie about his final achievements. And Dr. Harrington's colleague in the search for Planet X, Dr. Tom Van Vandern, reversed his supporting statements about the approach of Planet X and became completely silent. Now, the sad thing is, our leaders are going to save themselves and let the rest of us die. Dr. Jason Rand, a PhD, in a one-of-a-kind interview conducted by IntelliHub's editor-in-chief, said, "We believe that Planet X is a brown dwarf star called Wormwood. Now, Jason Rand wrote a book called The Return of Planet X. And he said, in November of 83, NASA's IRAS infrared telescope discovered an unbelievably huge, massive, and what looks like a slowly burning star headed right toward our solar system from the region of Orion. 24 hours later, the media was completely silent on the matter, and there hadn't been a peep since that time. There were 12 original planets in our solar system, just like Sitchin described. And it's been confirmed in prophecies, cave paintings, and Vatican information in 1,000 different sources. There's evidence that every 3,600 to 4,000 years, an unbelievably huge catastrophic event strikes the Earth. There are similarities between the Bible's Exodus and the book of Revelations, chapter 8, book 11. And it supports what so many people believe is a very real event. And the Colburn Bible talks about the destroyer. Manuscript, chapter 3, verse 4. When blood drops upon the earth, the destroyer will appear, and mountains are opened up and belch forth fire and ash. And certainly, a major a close passage of a huge body in space would cause gravitational anomalies that would, in fact, activate every volcano on the planet. Now, what if the book of Revelation isn't a book about the past, but a document of what's already happened time and time again, every 3,600 to 4,000 years? And what if the next passing of this celestial body is soon? And let's not forget, something destroyed the dinosaurs. And at the base of the Colorado Mountains are huge bone piles. Could we have another great flood? You know, given the state of human development and spiritual protocols, humans don't know the date when this may happen, but the you know, one of the things that Planet X is theorized to cause is a pole shift. Now, there are preconditions to the nearby passage of Planet X, such as sporadic global-wide dusting of red dust from the iron oxide trash cloud that surrounds Planet X. But that's only days prior to the pole shift. The most obvious will be the tipping of Earth, which the famous ancient accounts of the 3 days of darkness and 6 days of sunrise from the west, for those people in the northern hemisphere. And we will, of course, be put back into a pre-industrial agrarian lifestyle. I mean, our sophisticated civilization would be absolutely destroyed if something like this happened. With all the people on the planet, what would happen? How many would survive the passage of something like this? You know, in the days of classic astronomers such as Lowell, it was independence, risk-taking, and daring that allowed them to follow a different drummer. Today, all of science is under great pressure to toe the line of accepted practice. Independent thought and experimentation is not tolerated. If you cause ripples, you can say goodbye to your career and maybe even your life. It's the military and government entanglement that calls the shots today. Now, of course, the military and the government are actually stooges of whatever force is actually calling the shots from behind the scenes. You may call it the Illuminati, you may call it the Masons, the Vatican, the New World Order. Whatever you want to call it, there is some force in the shadows that controls everything. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Nibiru. And we'll see what new information has come to light. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.